and welcome back to another Artist Spotlight. I'm your host, Alex Gray, and today I'm joined with Miami-based producer and DJ Jordan Postrel, aka Monroe. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me today. How is life?
Life's great. I'm in Miami. It's sunny. Making music, having fun. Can't complain.
So you and your brother and your dad, you are all producers. I think I'm correct in saying that.
Honestly, I didn't really have much of a musical upbringing. My dad used to be a producer in the 70s for like James Brown and Ike and Tina Turner and stuff like that. And when we were kids, he tried getting us into it. But what 5 and 7 year old really wants to play the piano? So like me and my brother never got into it. And then when we were kids in high school, we kind of got into the party scene a little bit. And I mean, growing up in Miami, there's always been tons of clubs here, and they always had parties and stuff all over the place. So, you know, as a kid in Miami, you get a fake ID, you start to go out to places you shouldn't be, and like one thing leads to another. Before you know it, you're like, oh, I like this stuff. Then you're like, I want to get into DJing. So when I was 17, I got into DJing, like very cliche thing to do. And then I don't know, it was fun. So I was just like, okay, I don't really know what I want to do in life. Everyone was deciding what they wanted to do for college, and I've just always realized if you want to be good at something, just find the thing that you think is the coolest thing and that you enjoy, and just do that all the time and figure out how to make that work. So when I was 18, I was like, okay, I want to make this a job. I got to get into production. So for like the first 3 months, I literally forced myself to make production fun and to get myself into that habit and lifestyle. And then from there, it just evolved. Like when I was 22, that's when I actually started playing an instrument for the first time. I started taking piano lessons, but from 18 to 22, it was all Ableton, and then from there it just progressed more and more and more.
So am I correct to say you didn't go to college, you didn't study, you just kind of full focused on music and kind of self-taught?
Yeah, right after high school I was pretty much self-taught, and then I like went out of my way to like try to find people and mentors that I could work with. And I like went out to a studio in Ibiza for a couple summers.
Amazing.
And I was working out with I had a really cool mentor out there, this guy Lenny Ibizar, really trippy guy. he went there once and then 30 years ago, and then liked so much he never left. But he was great. I had my other buddy Mike, who was really good, and I just tried to get in studios with as many other producers as possible and like learn hands-on. And then also YouTube is your best friend, so like I'm a huge YouTube nerd. I'm always learning shit off YouTube.
Well, that's it. It's like people spend so much money on courses, and I think they can be great, but like there's so much online, there's so many free resources, and it's kind of like there's no excuse to not know anything now in this world, right? Like if you're passionate about something, there's everything you need to know online.
110%. And when I first started, there was very limited things online. Like there was maybe a couple things out there, like there was like DubSpot, and there was like Point Blank, and a few other things like that. And all those courses were a little expensive at the time for like most people, like $1,500 for a course. But the one thing I do have to say that's awesome about some of those courses and the fact that there's so much on YouTube now for people to learn, there's like a saying, it's like practice makes perfect, right? That's actually completely wrong. Perfect practice makes perfect. If you're practicing
True.
The wrong thing, you're going to go
True.
Nowhere. So having good guidelines from the beginning is the most important thing.
That's very true. So when would you say that you kind of made music a profession and you actually kind of started making money from it?
Well, that's kind of a blurred line, because like when I decided to make it as a profession, that was when I was like, okay, I want to do this. That's when I was 18. But when I was releasing music under my name, I waited 5 years until I was 23 to put stuff out, really. I mean, I had a couple other projects I did stuff with loosely, but it wasn't really like my main focus. But I wanted to make sure a lot of my stuff was as strong as some of the things that I was playing. And I wanted to make sure that it would also fit into my sets. And also, if you look at my catalog, I have a lot of different shit. I kind of was like a little all over the place in the beginning, and it's because I just like so many different things. And I really admired the producer Butch a lot, just because his versatility, in the sense he could do top 100 B-port stuff, then also go make an EP with Ricardo Villalobos. Like, I don't know too many other producers who have range like that. It's kind of like, oh, I just blanked out. What was the question again?
About when it was like kind of fully became your career.
Oh yeah. So when I was 23, that's when I actually started releasing music, and then it didn't really happen until I was like 24. I started getting like some tiny gigs here and there. But when I was 25, that's when I started kind of really starting to get like a few little tours booked, and every year it was building up more and more, and I would see my fee increase, and it was nice. And
That
but then when COVID hit, that really sucked because that set me back 2 years. It was like almost a reset for a lot of things. But I would say like 2 years after you start releasing music on good labels, unless you maybe get really lucky and you just start getting booked like crazy off one track, which I find is very rare nowadays, unless you have the connections to do it. But it takes a couple of years for your tracks to be out and marinate for people to actually learn about your music and know about you before they actually want to start booking you. At
Do you find
least that's my personal.
did you find that growing up in a family where your dad was already a producer and I don't know, is your brother older than you?
He's younger than me.
Okay.
He's 2 years younger.
So did you find that having a father who was already within that industry, do you think that helped kind of, because I think a lot of parents can be a bit really, you want to be a DJ, or you want to be a creative, or you want whatever artistic route you go down. I think parents can always be a bit funny about it. So, do you feel like having a father who was within that field, he was more supportive and more understanding?
Definitely more supportive. Connection wise, he doesn't have any more connections in the music industry because he got out in 74. So everything I did in the music industry was just me personally going out and hustling and doing it for myself. But the best thing that he provided for me was basically the comfort of time. And like he was willing to support me my first several years when I first got into music, and I took that in a positive way to basically be like, okay, I have this time now to hone in on my skills, so I'm gonna use it. I know I also have other friends that didn't have that luxury, and they had to hustle their ass off and like work a job on the side to also pay rent so they could focus on music. And it's even harder. But like, if you have the ability to have free time to focus on what you do, that's the most important thing in the beginning.
I agree. It's a really important luxury, I think, that is so important for a creative, especially because if you are working like a full-time job and then trying to hustle your music or whatever it is on the side, you're so tired. It's kind of impossible to have that creative freedom to actually allow your brain to start focusing on just making music and putting the energy fully into that.
Yeah, no, I'm producing a couple singers right now because I actually do a lot of production work outside of dance music too, and some of them are pretty good, but they're in similar situations to where they're great artists and stuff, but they have to work a full-time job. So I'm helping produce them out right now to get them record deals pretty much so they could focus on their music the full time. Like that's pretty much the only reason you want a record deal is so you could take time off of whatever you're doing so you can put all your
Yeah.
time into music. Otherwise, if you don't need that, then
It's tough now. Life's expensive. Do you know what I mean?
yeah. Well, luckily in the future, AI is going to control everything, so no one's going to have a job, and the government's going to take care of everything, so you're just going to be able to do what you want.
It briefly. You said when COVID came around, it kind of made you reset and step back a couple years. But do you feel like that kind of changed your sound a little bit? Do you think it helped kind of hone in on more and different skills?
Oh, it improved my skills by tenfold, without a doubt. Like, it may force me because like every DJ has the same story. It's like, oh yeah, we were gonna go play all these gigs, and one day later everything was canceled, and I had no income. So, like, you've probably heard that story a million different times. So like, when that happened, everyone was trying to figure out ways how to shift and pivot and make money with stuff. I tried doing a little bit of a sample company, and I was like, yeah, this is cool, but this is like way too much. This is way too time consuming. So I kind of got into doing production in other genres and stuff for other people, and that was very beneficial because it would teach you like a whole other sets of skills with production that you wouldn't typically use or think of when because you're doing dance music. And that was cool because I could apply different things that I learned from this to that, different wrong songwriting techniques and whatever. But yeah, no, it was definitely good. It also helped me create like a second source of income. So now when now my DJing's picking back up again, now I have like two flows of cash, which is a lot nicer. But some people hated it during the pandemic. I kind of liked it. Like I could stay in my studio for 3 years and it not bother me.
I I guess a period of time like that, it's what you make of it, right? It's, you clearly used it to be productive and it helped further your career. So would you say that you prefer the producing over the DJing and performing, or you kind of like them the
Oh no,
same?
I like them the same. They're both different types of fun. I mean, I love being in a studio. It's just like there's a certain like vibe and je ne sais quoi to it, but like DJing's super fun. Like that's like I always say, I'm a DJ first, producer second, because everything I do with production is from a DJ's point of view and how it would work on a dance floor. But I love the DJing part, but traveling sometimes a lot. That like I don't really love the
It's
traveling. I like the
tiring,
DJing.
yeah.
So you get paid to travel, you don't get paid to DJ.
Yeah. So you've clearly traveled quite a bit. Where has been your favorite place that you've got the chance to DJ at?
Probably Berlin. Berlin's always been
Really?
really fun. Yeah, I mean, Berlin's always a really trippy city. Like, they'll be like, hey, you want to play at Katerblau from 6 a.m. to noon? And I'm like, yeah, I do. I'll do that. Walk out of there like a fried twig. You're like,
Funny,
that's
because
pretty
like
sad.
seeing as you're from Miami, I would think that you'd say somewhere nice and sunny and hot would have been your favorite place, but you pick one of the rainiest cities I know.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in the tropics, so I love it and stuff. And like, Space is one of my favorite clubs. Like, it has an awesome like DJ booth and vibe to it. But I don't know. I mean, also fucking Amsterdam. That place
Yeah,
is
Amsterdam's
sick.
amazing.
That club, Brett, insane. It's
So
tiny and it sounds great.
I believe, am I right in thinking you have performed at ADE?
I played at ADE once at this like Japanese style venue. I haven't really played out at ADE too much. Like a lot of the labels I was working with at the beginning of my career, a lot of them stopped doing events and stuff. And over the past 3 years, like a whole new wave of labels kind of came into the mix and like kind of the whole scene pivoted. So right now my focus is releasing on some more labels that are European based so I could come out there more and play ADE and some of the bigger parties out there. Just the way the market moves.
But you also have, well, one of the festivals that I personally have not yet been to, but I would love to go to. You have pretty close ties to the Berner community. Tell
Oh
me,
yeah.
yeah, tell me a little bit about that and how you got into it and what's it like? Apart from the sand, I want to know everything about it.
Well, it's not really sand, it's more dust.
Dust,
But
yeah.
I got into it because my little brother actually brought me my first year when I was like 20 years old. Because I was in Ibiza when I was like 18 and 19, and I was telling him to come out there. He never made it, and he was out in the West Coast with some of my buddies. And my friend who he was staying with, his roommate was like this 40-year-old fucking Asian hippie dude with like dreads down to his knees, and he was like, and I can't even imitate his accent because I just can't do it. He's so funny. But he was just like, yo, Matt, I'm gonna take you to Burning Man. My brother's like, what the fuck is Burning Man? And he was like, bro, just trust me. So like he came to Burning Man. I got back from Ibiza like September 10th. He just got back from Burning Man, and he couldn't shut the fuck up about it for a year. And I was like, Jesus Christ, bail, go. And so I flew back from Ibiza the next summer, like I think August 15th around that time. And he took me, and I went with me, my brother, and then my dad showed up on Wednesday
No way,
in a
that's so
khaki.
cool.
He showed up in Burning Man in a khaki suit on Wednesday, and I was just, oh my God. I'm like, Dad, you didn't get the fucking memo. Like, everyone there's like running around with nipples out and wearing like tutus and all this crazy shit. It was pretty funny. There are some other stories I don't think I could say on camera, but I'll tell you in person another day. So like that's how I kind of got introduced to it, and I got hooked. So I started going every year. I worked with a couple camps, and then I got adopted by this camp called District, and we're like the largest day party at Burning Man. It's anywhere between like 5 to 12,000 people a day that come in and out of our camp. It's a little bit like Mad Max style partying. I started working with them about 3.5 years ago now, and we when I started meet when I met them at first, I was like, yo, you guys have a great brand. We should start a great label or something. And they were like, okay, let's talk about it. And this was like at Burning Man. A week later, they called me back. They're like, okay, let's do this. And we just set it all up, and we've been working since. And right now, we're actually about to launch like 8 or 10 events right before Burning Man, and we have like a bunch of others
Wow.
coming up this year. So it's gonna be really good. And we have some really cool releases coming out on the label now too, for the next releases. Like we have Digibaldi, we have Politics of Dancing. I got some other cool people sending in a bunch of stuff yet that I don't want to say just yet until it's signed and confirmed. But you know, everything's going pretty good and it's really fun. You should go to Burning Man. It's the sickest shit ever. If you want to go, let me know now because you have like 5 months to plan it.
I want to go. I want to go.
You can come
I'm
up
coming.
The district.
I'm going to wear a khaki suit just to honor your dad.
Sick.
So tell me a little bit more about District. I had that, from what I've read online, is this is a non-profit music and arts organization.
Yeah, so we're a nonprofit organization. Our whole focus is like supporting artists, giving them a platform to grow on. And like, we're still in the beginning stages, getting the ball rolling with a lot of things, even though I've been working on it for 3 years, because the first year and a half, 2 years was planning. Then I had to source the music for a while. And now the ball's really starting to get rolling. But like, my whole thing with my artists, I was like, because I'm an artist myself, I've been doing all this stuff with labels for years, and I recognize like, okay, well, what's my incentive of working for a label? If you're not going to support me and book me for your parties, I'm not really making money off these tracks. Like, dance music does not sell that much. So like, if I'm going to work with a label, I need an incentive. And for me, realizing that, I was like, how am I going to get artists assigned to this label if I don't give them some incentives to even come to us? So I was just like, Ben Kramer, we got to basically guarantee these artists at least a party or two a year minimum, and help them with whatever we can in the US market and other markets when we go there. And they were super cool with it. And that's helped me basically open conversations up with people, because I was like, look, I love your music. I want you to release with us. And if I can help out and book you a couple gigs in the States with our brand, I'd be more than happy to do so. So, I mean, that's how we kind of did that. But we have the record label that basically, we sign the music, and that's like a company that basically feeds into our nonprofit organization. And it just go our nonprofit organization, everything. We basically give out $250,000 a year to Burning Man for our party. It's how much it costs us, give or take, more or less, mostly probably more than that, actually, a lot of times. But that's how we do the fundraising all year round. We fundraise all year, save up money at all these events, and then we just give it away for free.
Amazing. Just for, yeah. So when you do these events, like before Burning Man, where are they? Is it just US based, or are you kind of more?
No, we do things all over. Like, we do a lot of stuff in the US, like Miami, New York, LA, all California, really, because they're really big out there. And then we have pop-up things, like we'll do some stuff at Area 15 in Vegas.
Okay, yeah, nice.
We'll do, yeah, not Area 51, Area 15.
No, I've been to Area 50. I went to Omega Mart. I was literally there.
How sick of that
it's
shit.
It's so sick.
It is the trippiest thing I've ever been to. I was like, yo. I was like, oh, you gotta pick that or the Louvre? I might just do that.
Yeah, fuck the history. Omega Mart.
Yeah, Omega Mart. I want to read some candy that has some insulting quotes on it.
Amazing. So I have to ask, what is it about house music that you love so much? I love it, but what is it that you love so much?
I just remember when I was 15 or 16 or 17, around that age group, when I got into it, it almost felt like house music was like a game to me. Like, when you listen to it live, like, there was almost like an engagement factor to it that really attracted me to it. And it's almost like a game or a sport in some weird ways, but also just like, I don't know, once that button clicks in your head and you get that motion of just like your hi-hat clap pattern, just like, it like kind of locks you in. It's like a chain.
I don't know,
it's stylistic. And also, the rougher styles of house music that are more gritty and stuff to me, like, I was a huge 90s hip-hop fan. I always loved like 90s hip-hop and stuff, because like the rawness, the simplification, the how dark some of the vocals were and stuff. And I noticed like when a lot of 90s hip hop guys, they kind of transitioned into house music. And house music in the beginning, a lot of it, like what hip hop producers did to funk and soul and all those genres, is what house producers did to disco. Same techniques, sampling stuff, and it kind of translates very similar. But yeah, no, I think that kind of helped me merge my taste over a little bit. Like when I heard like Euro house, where it was like super cheesy and trancy, I was like, yeah, I couldn't gel with that. But when I heard like more nitty-gritty shit, I was like, yeah, dog, this is me.
Do you think you'd ever venture off to any other genres, or do you think you're kind of pretty happy planted within that tech and house sphere?
I mean, I always do other genres. I mean, I have this project that I'm doing, Monroe. That's my like house minimalistic project or whatever you want to call it. But like as a producer, like I'm producing tons of different stuff all the time. Like I'm doing pop music for people. I'm doing hip hop for people. I've had to do world beats for people. And like if you want to really, I feel like, be successful on music too, you want to do things also outside of dance music as well. Like dance music's what I do as an artist. But I'm also a professional producer as like a job, you know what I mean? So you got to understand, I keep those two mind frames separated.
So when it comes to Monroe, why Monroe? Why is that the name? It kind of sounds like it's almost like an alter
Jordan
ego for you.
Monroe Postrel.
Say it again.
My middle name. Jordan Monroe Postrel. It's my middle
Oh,
name.
but why is it small M and then there's a full
Because
stop?
my name was always spelled Jordan lowercase m dot Postrel.
It kind of seems like it's an alter ego for you, the way you said that this is
I
my
know. I fuck with
project.
people. I fuck with people sometimes.
In what way? How?
I don't know. I'm like, oh yeah, I figured out it means something. If you figure it out, I'll just
How?
release music. And I just do it to see if someone could actually come up with a good moniker for me, so I could be like, oh yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
You know what you should do is you should run a competition on your Instagram and be like, I'm giving
Oh, that is
away,
a fucking good idea.
and get people to send in what they think it stands for and then steal someone's idea and be like, oh yeah, that was what it was all along.
Feels a bad word. I'll borrow it.
Yeah. I love that. So when you're not creating or playing music, what can we find Jordan doing?
Probably watching YouTube or fishing, like learning stuff on YouTube or fishing, one of the two. Like, it doesn't take a lot to keep me happy. I mean, just like I like to do this stuff, and then I need like some other activities outside of the music world to center my focus. There's a saying like, if you want to cut down a tree, you need to step away to sharpen your blade. So like doing this all the time, like kind of just drains me of all my creative juices. So
Yeah, for
like every like
sure.
couple weeks, I'll just, go do something wholesome on the water or do something nature. We don't really have too much like we don't have a lot of forest and like hills and mountains and stuff in Miami,
You have
but we are surrounded
the
by water. Yeah, we got a bunch of we have a bunch of alligators and crocodiles and
Everglades.
sharks, lots of sharks. But
So, what is it about fly fishing in particular? That's quite a niche
well, it's not
hobby.
so much fly fishing. I do fly fishing like only a couple times. It's more just like regular fishing on boats and stuff. Like we go deep sea or we go inshore fishing where the water's like a foot flat and you can see the bottom and you see wildlife all over you.
Wow,
And I
amazing.
kind of like that aspect. And Miami's honestly the best place to do it, and Miami and the Bahamas, just because the sea life is just so exciting out here. Like you can go out on the boat in the morning and just hang out. And like even if you have a shit day, it's just so much. It's so fun to. Wait, all my light for some my Philip Hue lights are dimming down on me. They have a mind of their own, but it's just nice to like be out in the water. Like you'll have a fun time just like not even catching anything, just seeing wildlife. Like you'll see like turtles and just like manta rays jumping out of the water and dolphins and sharks walk come around the boat. Like it's like going to the sea aquarium in nature.
Do you feel like you get inspiration from being out in the water, or is it more just kind of just to clear your mind and just be kind of zen?
Oh, 100%. Like if you're like when I'm out in the water, it's like that whole concept of like doing something and not really thinking too much about it, and it's just kind of like past like you'll ideas will kind of just come into your head. And like when we're fishing and stuff, we'll be playing music and talking shit with your friends, smoking weed, whatever the fuck, and then like I'll sometimes just get ideas in my head and I'll just pull my phone out, write it down real quick, or like I'll make a voice note or something. But or a lot of times when I come back, but my head's cleared and I don't have like all these things I've been listening to in my head and I have a clean sheet, I'll come back and be like, oh, this is exactly what I want to do right here. I just notice when I stay in the studio too long, like weeks on end, and I don't get out, that's when things get a little stale.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of like I get it as well with some of the hobbies that I do. It's almost like that, what you just said. It's almost like from God or whatever you believe in, it just kind of drops down into your mind without you even trying. But because you've kind of taken yourself away from this situation where you're trying to force yourself to come up with ideas or whatever it might be, you remove yourself, you're enjoying, you're just not thinking about it directly, but things just kind of drop in. like a connection to the gods,
100%.
right?
There's actually this really funny thing I noticed when I was working at some studios in LA, and I noticed it because I went to a few different studios and they all had fucking ping pong tables. Like a couple of studios had ping, and I was like, and in the recording rooms too, like because they had these massive recording rooms, they had a ping pong. I was like, why the fuck do you guys have a ping pong table in here? And the engineers were telling me, they're like, oh yeah, it's kind of like a thing. Like producers and writers will come in and they'll play their music and they'll just go in and start playing ping pong and not think about what they were making, and then they'll suddenly get an idea because their mind changed their course of thought. And I was like, huh, interesting. Yeah,
I feel like that's also in London, they have that in offices here, but it's more just like a perk to sell you to join the job. It's like we have beer fridge Fridays and a ping pong table.
that's so funny.
So, what is coming up for you for the rest of this year? I can't believe we're already in May. Anything exciting? Any travels? Any big festivals? Burning Man, obviously.
Yeah, we have I have a bunch of gigs coming up. I'm gonna go down to Argentina. I'm talking to people in Brazil
Amazing.
right now. I'm trying to work out some more things. I can only do Europe for like 3 weeks this summer just because me being an American artist, things are kind of busy for me over here because everyone else is in Europe. So it's hard for me to go away to turn down like money on shows. But we have a district party in New York. We're doing one in San Francisco. We have one in Vegas that we're doing. I'm gonna go to 80 for sure, but that's kind of far ahead. I have my monthly party here in Miami that I pretty much do called Private Parts every single month. It's me and my two friends. Kind of funny name, right? What else? I got there's a bunch of other things going on. I'm playing Montreal at Stereo, which is really cool. That's been a venue I've never played before, and I've always wanted to play it. It's like one of the best sound systems in North America. I don't know. I know there's a bunch of things. I just gotta look at it. I can't think off the top of my head.
Do you have any more releases for us? Can we be excited about any new drops?
Oh yeah, I'm
Oh
working out. There's like 800 unreleased songs on my
my God.
SoundCloud, and that's not even on my computer. So I'm like trying to figure out like what's the I'm talking to my buddies who I do private parts with. We're talking about releasing that into like a boutique label that we'll put out a bunch of stuff on, because like District's like I have a percentage of it and then we do all that, but I have that with like a team of people and it's kind of like the District sound. I'm also gonna do another label that's like me and my close homies. And then also I have a release coming out on Phil Weeks's label, Rob Soul. And then I have another release coming out on my buddy's label, Ribo. And Nabelski, they're two friends of mine from the West Coast. What else do I have going on? I have another district release. I talking to a bunch of people about signing stuff right now in Europe, but I'm just going back and forth, and I'll know soon if I'm actually gonna like which labels I'm gonna be releasing with over there. But